Good morning, good morning, good morning. I am Sharifa Hardy, your host of the Roundtable Talk Show, and we have a very interesting show for you today. But don't we always? We bring together strangers, complete strangers who never met each other, who have diverse backgrounds, which means we can talk about absolutely anything. We can talk about business. We could talk about spirituality. We never know what's going to happen. It could be mental health or it could be cars. I don't know, but what we'll learn, I'm sure your friends want to learn as well. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. I'm pretty sure someone somewhere needs to hear this message today. So go over there. Someone is sleeping peacefully. They're dreaming of lollipops and Santa and Christmas gifts. Wake them up. It's time to wake up. Get up and let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live. So while you're waking your friends, I'm going to do what you bring me here to do, and that is to introduce our guest. Now, our first guest, Miss Emily Broucher, is a keynote speaker and trainer who is singularly focused on helping people create trusting relationships across differences. She does this by teaching clients the tools to overcome the three challenges that inevitably get in the way of trust: ego, culture, and power. For the last decade, she has worked with corporate, nonprofit, academic, and government clients on strengthening the inclusive brain, fostering the trust mindset, creating psychological safety, and practicing stress management techniques, always pointing people towards the best version of themselves. Good morning, Emily. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me here. I'm good.
You are so welcome. I'm excited. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so I my background's in international development, and I just became really fascinated with, why are these relationships across differences, whether it's cultural differences or gender differences or race differences, why are they so hard? Why do we get so tripped up in them? So for the last decade or so, I've just been really focused on that. And now I'm working with clients, doing keynotes and trainings on it. And now I get to do it virtually. So become a pro at the virtual training, the virtual keynotes, like I'm sure a lot of folks have. And just really focusing in right now on how do we build trust virtually? Like, how do we, with our teams that are, everyone is so stressed. Stress has a very particular impact on our ability to build trust, even on a neurological basis, on a neurological level. So I'm focusing in there, helping people create new habits working virtually. But a big thing happening in my life is that next week I launch a podcast with my co-host. The podcast is titled Humanize: Story from the Hearts About Social Justice. And so it's kind of him and I, we come from radically different backgrounds, engaging in kind of tough and really honest conversations about race and about politics and just kind of trying to get into it and bring people into the conversation a lot. So that is launching on Monday, which is exciting.
That is wonderful. I'm excited for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, Emily, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
It seems like you're one of those healers in the world. You want to make this world a better place. You kind of seem to be one of those people that kind of want to fix things, help people to get along. Was there a
Yeah.
specific moment or a situation that happened where you said, you know what? I have to do something about this?
Great question.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I after college I went to the Peace Corps and I was in the country of Kiribati in Central Pacific, which not many people have heard of. And I was really disappointed with kind of how the Peace Corps was being run and the mindset of kind of what I can now label white saviorism that was going on there, and the sense of like we have to save these people from themselves. And I almost left the Peace Corps because I was so fed up with the mindset of a lot of the other volunteers. Luckily, I was on a really remote island, so I was like, well, I guess I can choose my own path. I get to choose how I show up in this world. I get to choose my influence. And so I really focused on learning language. I focused on listening. And I built some amazing relationships, but I was also able to listen and say, oh, here's an area that I could support you with. I can help get some funds for that project you're interested in. And so it kind of, stemmed from that, and then realized that I could teach people what I had been doing. And then I realized I could get a couple master's degrees in that area and I could just run my own business. And so that was really when I was overseas and on a really remote island, is when I kind of was like, there's got to be something we can do better here.
Yes, Emily, I have never heard that phrase in my life, the white saviorism. Is that what you,
Oh,
what's,
really?
no, I've never heard of that. I mean, as a phrase, I've heard it as a theory of like people like coming in, like, let me just save you. And I've never heard that in reference to the Peace Corps. Like when you talk, most people talk about the Peace Corps, they talk about, oh, we went and we saved and we got water and we
Oh,
helped
no.
and we did all of these things. But in your experience, the way you viewed it is white saviorism.
I think it's, I mean, I think anyone who goes abroad to volunteer, anyone who volunteers in their community should be reflective about, like, why am I doing this? What am I getting from it? Am I getting more than I'm giving? What's my mindset? Do I think that my ideas are more important, my values are more important than the community I'm going into? And so, yeah, it's a really important conversation to be had before you step into anyone else's culture, really.
Wow, kind of interesting. Now, Emily, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Dawn F. Landry. Dawn is an award-winning and respected business professional. She has spent over half of her 27-year career in Houston's corporate real estate industry, excelling in business development and marketing leadership positions within the region's largest economic development organization, as well as international commercial construction companies. In February 2017, Dawn founded Authenticity. Authenticity. She'll pronounce that because it's spelled differently, as an independent B2B growth strategist and a Gallup certified Clifton Strengths coach to provide consulting, training, and coaching services that optimize technical teams' engagement and productivity. Good morning, Dawn. How are you?
Good morning. I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm well. I'm really, really well. Thank you so much for asking. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. No, you didn't cut me off at all. And if you did, that's what we do here. That's what I always tell people when I cut them off. I'm like, that's what we do here. So pronounce your company's name because I just butchered it.
It's authenticity. And so
Okay.
similar to authenticity, but when I founded it, so I'm like the most unintentional entrepreneur. There's a lot of unintentional themes in my life overall. I call myself the Forrest Gump. The good thing kind of happened to me. I just kind of walk through life. Several years ago, Michael Singer's book, The Surrender Experiment, found me. And really, it's just being surrendered to whatever is put before you, you know, that given day, which is the antithesis of corporate America, right? Where you have to have a strategic plan and have a 3, 5, 10-year plan overall. And so when I started my company, well, let me just back up a little bit. So I built my career on business development, specifically in the technical service industry. So heavy engineering, heavy architecture, commercial construction type of space, and then worked for the last, you know, full-time in-person or in-company position that I had was with an international publicly traded commercial general contractor. I led the business development and was one of the officers for Texas. And when I spit out the other side of that and started my own company in February 2017. I really was working with companies specific to kind of expanding their business development outreach and whatnot. Then I started training really technical teams specific to that. And then once I worked with several of those companies, I actually realized that a lot of times companies don't even realize that they are not in alignment with one another from a visionary standpoint. And so really started working with them on getting some alignment from a corporate structure aspect of things as well.
Let me ask you about that. When you say they are not in alignment, are you referencing the they within the company?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So leadership. And so whether the leadership is actually in another country or the leadership is next door, it doesn't ma you know, it doesn't really matter. If you don't have a vision for your company, if you don't appreciate one another for the diversity of experience and thought, then and whatnot that everyone brings to the table, then you can't be in lockstep. And then you can't set the course for your company to move forward. And so really that's what I work with companies on, is making sure that the team appreciates one another. And I use the Gallup Clifton Strengths assessment to do that, to create this kind of really communication tool amongst one another. And then last year, this time last year, 2 days before Thanksgiving, my husband had a stroke. And so it was a significant one. And so because I knew kind of how he was wired strengths wise, and I knew how I was wired strength, and I am wired strengths wise, really that actually helped us to overcome and get to this point that we're in right now. And actually his stroke helped me to be not only a better person, but a better business professional as well.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I want to talk about that, Dawn, but I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Marty Denial. Marty is the owner of Denial Accounting and Software Solutions, LLC, a QuickBooks consulting and bookkeeping practice she started in 2012. Marty provides QuickBooks and accounting support to individuals and businesses virtually. She is most passionate about fixing issues for her clients, teaching them how to get the most out of their QuickBooks experience, streamlining processes, and providing financial reports that help her clients know the health of their business and the ability to make timely decisions about their business. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. I'm well. How about you?
I am fine. I'm one of those people that just love to hire professionals, you know, and this is a conversation my dad and I have all the time, because he's like, Sharifa, you order too much food for delivery. You could just make it. You do all, and I'm like, I just like to hire professionals. And I went to college to be an accountant. Most people don't realize that.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, like, I'd rather hire a professional like yourself. Do you get that often from entrepreneurs and business owners?
I do. I get that often that they don't want to do it. And that's great because I do. So it's a great fit. So, and I love working with entrepreneurs. I'm still kind of an entrepreneur myself, even though I wear the accounting hat. But yeah, I love doing it. I've been doing it. I actually went to school with an accounting minor and planned on majoring in business, but my path kept redirecting to accounting. And so I eventually stayed in the industry and opened my own practice in 2012. So.
That's wonderful. What made you decide to open your own practice?
It was a big decision. My son was just graduating from high school and I had been a single mom. And, you know, nothing against the CPA firm I was at. I got a lot of value and a lot of growth through them, but I kind of felt like I hit a ceiling. I had made the decision to not seek a CPA designation. Though when I went into the public accounting, that was my goal. And the whole purpose I went into that CPA firm, but I realized I really had a passion for doing the bookkeeping and the consulting on the software side of the bookkeeping that I kind of pivoted and turned. And so I kind of hit a ceiling, nothing against them, but more of my life goals, and decided to steer the ship myself.
But that's wonderful. I'm more like Dawn, like how Dawn was saying she's this accidental entrepreneur. Everything I've always done, I actually wanted to be a stay-at-home mom back in the 90s. My kids are 23 and 26 now. And so everything that happened, I kind of wandered into. I was laid off 8 times. I never actually made a decision to start my own business. So I'm always proud and love to hear the stories of people who do. But what was that like for you? Was it, you know, because many people are intimidating starting off on a new practice. Like, how can I compete? Yeah. How can I stay in business? What makes me different? So what was it like for you?
It was a big decision, because in the accounting industry, you sign a 2-year non-compete, which is standard. So, I mean, that's a standard industry. And so I had to start off from scratch. I mean, I couldn't even look for my own clients while employed by them, because I would violate that agreement. And even though I was coming towards the end of my single parent years, my son was still going to college and there was still that, you know, need to feel like I needed to still provide for him. And I went to my family and friends really thinking they would deter me and tell me to wait. And they all said, no, you should have done this years ago. So just having that support behind you, that you can do it. It was a big step, but I had an amazing business network, and I would say a good share of my business, especially the first couple of years. I didn't even have a website until I was 4 years in.
Oh, wow.
I was just blessed with a business network that supported me and lifted me up, and it just rolled away with me. And I was just very fortunate to have that experience.
Let me ask you a question, Marty, because I like you. We're having fun today. We learning how to do business. One of the things that I often talk about, and I really believe that many businesses suffer because they don't have any idea how to do any aspect of bookkeeping. You know, so often, you know, a person finds a passion for something. Like, I love riding motorcycles, right? But just because, not me personally, I'm just talking about this hypothetical. You know, that's how rumors get started. But just because I have a passion for something doesn't necessarily mean that I would be a successful business owner. And I always recommend that entrepreneurs take some type of business classes, especially bookkeeping. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I've through the chamber and just through my own local practice, you know, as business owners, you have to really streamline your time for the things that need your attention the most. But at the same time, a business owner wants to have their hand on the accounting because it's their lifeblood. I mean, that the cash flow has to be there. And there's a little bit of fear if you hand that over to somebody, how that's going to be utilized. What I encourage owners to do and entrepreneurs is to never take a back seat, still be engaged, but let somebody do the day-to-day and have that regular check-in. And I even teach workshops where I teach people to, it's bookkeeping 101. It's not meant to make you an accounting professional, but it's to give you kind of the basics of the accounting and things to look for, not just if you are doing your own accounting, but the oversight of another accounting professional. So it's understanding the lanes. It's okay to have my own lane in accounting and have another person their own lane for the business owner. They don't have to butt heads. You can work as a team to be able to explain, this is why I'm posting your accounting transactions this way. This is what it means on your balance sheet. This is what it means on your income statement. And just having those conversations. I think sometimes there's a, that's my lane, that's your lane, and don't come over. You can blend them carefully. I think it's actually a good thing.
Absolutely. Now, Marty, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the gentleman in the room, Mr. Patrick Hickey Jr. Patrick is a full-time lecturer of English and assistant director of the journalism program at Kingsborough Community College, and he is the founder and editor-in-chief of ReviewFix.com. He's also a former news editor at NBC Local, integrated media and national video games writer at Examiner.com, where his work was mentioned in national ad campaigns by Disney, Nintendo, and EA Sports. Hickey was also the editor-in-chief of two college newspapers before he received his BA in journalism from Brooklyn College. Hickey's work has been published in the New York Daily News, the New York Times, Complex, the Hockey Writers, Yahoo, Broadway World, and so many more. Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. I'm happy to be here.
Patrick, we're going to talk, right? You're the only man on this show, so we're going to have a chit chat, right? We're going to keep it real because I love to do that on the round table talk show. So Absolutely. Let me just ask you this question, because Emily's over here trying to save the world and get everybody else in the world to see things the way they are. But I read your bio, and when I was reading it this morning, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be some old stuffy dude, and I don't know what he's going to say. And then Patrick showed up, and I was like, okay, bio. I had to keep going back and forth because I thought you was like a skater dude, you know? Do people ever get that impression of you and then are surprised?
So I've taught college for close to 15 years. Several different colleges. I'm a full-time
tenure. Okay, hold on. I'm going to have to do a doll and cut you off. Hold on. Yeah. You're like 21. How did you teach for 15 years? Like
I'm 37.
Oh, I guess I'm a grown man. Okay, go ahead, Patrick. Go ahead, finish your story.
But like I was saying, like I've taught college for 15 years. And before COVID, you know, I would go into work every morning and I would come in early. So I could write before my classes would start. And every morning, like clockwork, security guard would be like, college doesn't open until 8 o'clock. And I'm like, I've worked here for 14 years. I'm like, I'm a journalism program. Like, I went here 20 years. I remember you from 20 years ago. And they're like, yeah, no way you're a professor. So then I had to take out my wallet and show them my ID card. So yeah.
Do you feel that that helps you or hurts you in the industry? Not at the college with the security, but just in general.
It's a mixed bag, because the thing is, I've gotten this quite often when I do interviews with people over the phone or through email, they expect the same thing. They expect the old stuffy dude. And then when they see me, they're like, you don't look the way that you sound. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then the thing is too, I'm 6'4". I'm 250 pounds. So it happens a lot. I'll get on the bus or something like that, and somebody will go, "Do you play football?" And I'm like, "Oh my God. Oh my God." So it's like, I can't win. Like, so it's, I think it's good to be a little bit like a mystery, like an enigma. It definitely helps me relate more to my students. It sucks in a way because, like, I've been teaching for 15 years and a lot of my coworkers would be like, "Oh, he's young, he's a kid." And I'm like, "I've worked here longer than you." Like, so, I mean, looking young, I mean, I literally feel like I'm 18. And like I said before the show, I've lost a significant amount of weight the last couple of years. So it's like, before that, I still looked young. I was just, I had a couple more chins. But now I feel a lot better too, emotionally. So it's kind of like, I've had like this kind of like genesis in a way the past couple of years. And before that, I started writing my book. So that was like another like total career awakening. But I think we spend way too much time in life just judging people. Like, if you go on the train, the second that you go on the train, you look around and you can cast type everybody. But if you realize that every single one of those people can do something that you don't expect they can do, you end up in such a cooler place. And I feel like that's like how my life is. Like, I speak to people every day for my books and for my site and stuff, and I'm just like, tell me something about you that's not on Wikipedia. Tell me something about you that nobody else knows. Let's start a conversation like that, instead of like, "Oh, what everybody knows about you, who cares?" You know? So yeah,
I'm definitely, I agree.
People.
No, I agree. A friend of mine and I were having the same conversation the other day at the mall. We had pulled in, and then another car had pulled in next to us, and they got out the car, and it was an older couple. And he walked from his side of the car over to her side of the car, opened the door for her. So she got out. He put his hand on the small of her back and they walked into the mall. And I was like, "Oh my God, that is so cute." I was like, mm-hmm. "He has his hand on the wall. He opened the door." I said, "You could just tell they've been together for like 40, 50 years. And then I'm like, mm-hmm. "Wait a minute. Like, they might have just met online yesterday. You never know."
You never know.
We always judge. So let's talk a little bit about journalism, because some of the names that you mentioned, I think a lot of people, especially in our audience, are trying to figure out how to get their stories or someone to write. So how did you start writing on some of these well-named newspapers and media outlets?
Well, I kind of did it the old-fashioned way. I went to school for journalism, got my associate's degree from Kingsborough, the school that I teach now at. And I was editor-in-chief of the school newspaper there. We won a national award. I interviewed several actors, actresses, professional wrestlers, professional baseball players while I was there.
Who was your favorite? Who was your favorite?
Out of the baseball players, probably David Wright, who used to be the third baseman for the Mets. But I interviewed like Dallas Page, the professional wrestler. Like, he's like one of my heroes. He's awesome. Voice actors. So like the guy that plays Master Shake from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. That was really cool. So I did that. And then I went to Brooklyn College for my bachelor's degree. And I did the same exact thing. I took over their newspaper. I became editor-in-chief of their newspaper, won some awards. Then after I got my bachelor's degree, I started teaching part-time and working on my master's. And then I met several masters. Graduate school was great for connections. So that's where I got published in the Daily News, the New York Times. And then one of my professors was working at NBC at the time. And he was like, "Don't come to class today. Go to this interview instead." And I was like, okay. I'm like, I didn't have a suit. I had to like go to Men's Warehouse and like buy a suit like same day, you know. And I ended up getting the job. Like, so right after graduate school was over, I started working at NBC. So I worked there for 2.5 years. I covered 2 Super Bowls, a presidential election, 2 Olympics, presidential elections. I had my own fantasy football column, covered WrestleMania, tons of video game stuff. So it was great. So it's like, there's so many avenues to do it. You can start a blog, you can start a podcast, you can do all those things. But I really did it the old fashioned way because, I mean, when I started college, MySpace was still around. So, so I did it the old fashioned, and I had to learn all of the skills that everyone has now. Like, I love Instagram. I'm on Instagram like 24/7. My wife yells at me all the time. So it's like, I've tried to embrace all of like the new technology, but at the same time, remember the thing that got me to the dance, which was that foundation in education. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into journalism and writing. And then I eventually had to make a decision to leave NBC because I wanted to get married and I wanted to have kids and stuff. And I just saw,
like, NBC's against that. Like, no kids and family at NBC. No,
you could, but it was just like I would remember somebody that was married would be across, like, on the other side of the cubicle, and they would be like, "Honey, I'm busy right now. I can't talk right now." And I'm just like, whoa. The married couples would constantly be arguing and stuff, and I'm just like, I get along with my girlfriend really well. Like, we don't fight, you know. And when we do fight, I let her win right away, so the fight, you know, doesn't, like. But like, we're good, and I want it to stay that way. And I think, like, the deal breaker was, I remember one Thanksgiving, they were like, "Pat, you're coming in for Thanksgiving, right?" And I'm like, "No." And they're like, "Well, it's your turn to work a holiday." And I'm like, when was their turns, like, allotted? Like, when did that happen, you know? So I ended up working from home. They gave me a key fob, and I worked from home from Thanksgiving from, like, midnight to, like, 10 o'clock in the morning. It was a disaster. I hated it. And I was just like, I eat full time and still write. And I was running my site at the same time. So I was working at NBC, teaching and writing all at the same time. And I was like, all right, if I leave NBC, it's going to hurt, because it's so much fun to say that you write for NBC, you know?
Right.
You know?
I need you to write for NBC right now, because we need a story about Sharifa Hardy. But absolutely. One of the things that I find very interesting, and I do this all the time, so maybe you can help me with a little experiment, mainly because I have nothing better to do but play games.
Let's do it.
I'll read some articles, and it could be about the most mundane thing. But when they write it, I'm like, that was good, but it was just basic. But they spun the story in such a way. So Marty is an accountant. We all, you know, everybody knows about accounting. How can we spin this so that it gets more press, more attention for Marty and what she's doing, but sound interesting?
I would say find the things in it that are the most compelling and push those to the top of the conversation. Oftentimes when we speak about ourselves, we bury the lead, which is, like, the most important thing about ourselves. We wait until the end of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever I interview somebody, I always have, like, course, like, A, B, and C, like, the things that I want to attack, the things that I want them to talk about. But sometimes it's boring. So my last question is always, is there anything else that you want to say? And sometimes that's where you get the really juicy part. Like, I remember one time I interviewed this comic book writer, John Bachter, really cool, wrote a really cool book. The interview was at the end. I'm like, is there anything else that you want to say? And he's like, actually, yeah, I just started a new book, and it's about this relationship that I had with this guy when I was a kid in Cleveland. He was a really nice guy, but he turned out to be, like, America's, like, worst serial killer. I'm like, excuse me? And he's like, yeah, I knew Jeffrey Dahmer when I was a kid. And
oh my God,
I'm writing a comic book and drawing a comic book about it, blah, blah, blah. It ended up being a great comic book. It ended up being a really cool movie. And I posted the original interview, and it did okay. But then when I posted the, you know, John Bachter discusses my friend Dahmer, that got tremendous traffic for my site. So it's like, that's what you kind of have to do. You have to let people talk, get everything out. But then sometimes they don't even know the story too. So that always, what else are you working on? Anything else you want to say, or tell me something that nobody else knows?
Oh, that's cool. You didn't answer my question about Marty, but I'm gonna let that slide. So Dawn,
it's on our topic.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I try to throw that in there. But Dawn, do you know any serial killers?
I know no serial killers.
None?
Yeah, no serial killers. Sorry.
Okay. Let me see. What, let me see what else we got. No, I don't. Emily, you?
No, not even close.
Marty?
I sure hope not.
Okay. So we got it. Okay. So somebody has to tell me something that would surprise me, something that nobody else knows, because we got to turn this accounting story into something that will sell newspapers.
I know accounting's not the most exciting field, is it?
No, but okay. We're going past the accounting.
But it's like the story, right? That's what everyone wants to know the story. And I think that Patrick, I think that point is really interesting. And I think of, like, I wouldn't even know, like, what would be interesting to someone else, you know? Like, I worked so long on, like, the value prop and the pitch and stuff, and I'm always blocked there, because I don't know, would you say, like, just talk to more people and throw things out and see what people are interested in? Like, how do you discover that thing about yourself?
I think the more research you do on somebody always helps. Mm-hmm. I always asking what inspires somebody is important. So a lot of the interviews now are with video game developers. So that's what most of, that's what my books are about, The Minds Behind the Games books. And the thing is, a lot of people will just play video games just to play video games. And they don't know that there's a whole story behind the game, you know, like how the game was made, what the person was like that created it, the things that, you know, they love. So I ask them their favorite music, their favorite food, their favorite this, their favorite that, because sometimes you'll be playing a game and go, you know, this really reminds me of like this book, or, oh, this really reminds me of this song, or this reminds me of this. So it just gives you another way of connecting with something that you already like because you're playing the game for a reason. So that's with video games. But if you're interviewing somebody, like if you were interviewing somebody that you felt was like kind of stuffy, you would ask like, oh, when you were doing that, when you were traveling across the world, like what was on your playlist? What was on your Spotify? You know, did you bring a movie with you? You know, like just try and bring a little bit, because sometimes if you can get somebody to go, you know, like when I was traveling to Saudi Arabia to do this, blah, 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 and the person's already checked out because they don't care about Saudi Arabia, you know, they'll go, oh, I watched Jerry Maguire 5 times. And you'll go, what? Why? I just love the movie. Well, what part? And then all of a sudden you'll start a conversation and all of a sudden they'll be a human. So now you'll care more about the things that they want to talk about. So
no, that's an excellent point. Excellent point. But then back to Emily's question, I find as a talk show host, the same thing that Patrick mentioned, I call it, my phrase on this show is gold. Like people will be talking and giving a message and then I'm like, wait a minute, stop. That was gold. Because sometimes we have information and we have knowledge and a part of our story that we know, but we don't think is very interesting. But when they open up and people start talking, it's like, wow, I would have never known that happened had you not opened up. When I launched my first show in 2009, Ask Sharifa Radio, it was a 1 hour interview, one guest. And every guest would say the same thing. I don't know if I can talk for an hour. An hour after the show, they would go, oh my God, it felt like 10 minutes, you know? But they opened up and they didn't realize how much they had to share. So I love what you were saying. Dawn, what are your thoughts on what Patrick or the conversation?
Well, actually, I was thinking about Marty. When Marty, whenever you were introducing yourself, it reminded me of my CPA also. And so if ever there was a scenario where I should not be an entrepreneur, it's because I don't have the bookkeeping background. I migrate to words versus numbers all the time. And so when I started my company almost 4 years ago, I just knew that I needed to like really lock arms with my CPA. And the way that my CPA makes me feel, like I don't mind going to my CPA because he's really warm. I really trust him. He has all the credentials and everything else. To me, if I were to sell Marty, or if I were to do like a pitch specifically to a story for Marty and her business, it would be, how do you make your clients feel? Because in my mind, so I don't know if anybody's old enough to know Fantasy Island, the show.
Of course.
Yep.
Of course. The plane. I'm sorry.
Rourke, and basically got on the island and he threw his arms open and said, welcome to Fantasy Island. My CPA reminds me of Mr. Rourke. He looks nothing like him, but he's a very short Indian man, lovely man. But I left my accountant several years ago and I called my husband up and I said, Siraj reminds me of Mr. Rourke. And he said, what are you talking about? I'm like, he, like, huge smile on his face. He just is so warm and inviting. And when I talk and counsel clients of mine from a technical standpoint, I'm like, what do your clients feel about you? Are they excited to see you? Or are you like Eeyore, like, oh my God, Dawn is coming to visit me. I hate it. She's such a battery drain. And so as I think about it, as it relates to Marty and this topic, that's how I would advise, is how do you make your clients feel? And to me, that's the pitch in the story, specific to something as technical as accounting.
See, I would
you go, Dawn.
That is a huge part of your brand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a corrupt. Well, you know, it's like whenever I do interviews with video game developers, I'm in this room. So they automatically see all this stuff and they're just like, yeah, you're a geek. And I'm like, absolutely. I am king geek. Like, let's geek out. Like, super geeky, you know, and that's what you have to sell. You know, you have to sell like the experience. The experience is almost just as important as the product, because if you're telling somebody something that's super cool, but you have no idea how to sell it, or you're like Ben Stein with dry, clear eyes. Like no one's gonna buy it, you know? So, it helps me do interviews with video game developers that, like, I'm a voice actor too. So, like, and I've acted in video games before. So that helps. So, but that's the thing. You've got to, like, just turn it up. I know a ton of Broadway actors, and they're always like, your speaking voice has to be 130% when you speak. They're like, you have to be extra loud. And they're like, at first people are going to go like that, like, wow, why is this person so loud? But then what's going to happen is other people are going to start gravitating, and then you can slowly start to lower your voice. And then you can get like 70 and people are going to get super close to you because now they want to hear everything that you have to say. So that's you know, wow.
See, that's what I'm talking about right there. The magic of taking accounting and making it sound interesting and fun. I think you just need to rewatch this video, Marty, the information Dawn gave you. Just absolutely. Become that, because I think that was beautiful. Now, Emily,
yeah.
You're not focused on accounting. You're focused on making the world a better place, righting some of these wrongs. Dawn, you got some magic over there. What are we going to do with Emily?
What are we going to do with Emily? I don't know. So I need to know a little bit more about Emily. I know a little bit about accountants, right? So I would think specifically to Emily, it's really figuring out at the heart of it, what value do you bring to those organizations? And then being able to articulate the value. That's, you know, Simon Sinek, that's your why, right? And so what right. is the value that you bring? What do your clients say about you? Why do you get up in the morning overall, specific that? Mm-hmm. If you can articulate that, then actually that tells the story at the end of the day. It's kind of working backwards, you know, working out and then bringing it closer to home. I always say extract your ego and make it more about them than it is about you. And so it's kind of like the elevator pitch, right? And so everybody talks about the elevator pitch and people go, well, what do you do for a living? Well, you know, I have 27 years of experience in doing business development and I spent all, well, that's not super exciting. But if I say, you know, my why is to inspire, ignite, and activate the greatness in others and myself. And it's like, oh, tell me more. Mm-hmm. You know, so what is it specifically about that that can kind of get you going to really ignite the conversation overall?
Yeah. I feel like what often happens is like, when I talk about what I do and you know the tools that I teach and like my why, that it you know, I work with organizations that aren't like massive and no one has money for like, you know, the 2-day rollouts of training like they used to, is that it's like, yeah, but we have to do this like technical piece first, or like people, I don't know, like, well, I feel like it's different in 2020. There's a bit of a more of an interest of actually aligning with equity work and actually going beyond performative and into transformative when it comes to how people are treating each other. But I find that so often organizations really just undervalue what people like me would bring, which is like getting people together in like the safety of a small group and like actually getting real with each other, actually being honest, actually connecting in an unfiltered way where people feel safe, and then they can start to bring what has been distracting them from work. You know, like people experiencing microaggressions all the time. How are you going to show up and actually just focus on your work if part of your brain is constantly like, am I safe? Am I safe? Am I safe? Which is the fundamental work of the brain. And I'll talk to clients and it's like, yeah. And then it's like, oh, okay, but maybe we're just going to put it off a little bit, or we're afraid of what those conversations are going to surface. So it's like my frustration with society becomes my frustration with potential clients. It's like, come on, you have to face what's going on here and wake up.
So Emily, let me ask you, who is your ideal client?
So I tend to work pretty well with engineers. So technical engineers and mechanical engineers, because I have a science way of approaching communication and interpersonal work. And then I can bring it into the more like, oh, let's actually get real and honest, where a lot of engineers don't necessarily go there right away. They're like, no, the numbers are it. You know, the numbers are it, and relationships are kind of behind the scenes. So that those are usually ideal fit clients for me, you know, like the 100 to 500 size So that's a good fit for me.
What I found, Emily, is that especially right now, like at the beginning of COVID, everything was kind of frozen in time, right? But then like—
Right, totally, yeah, self-included.
I started to thaw out a little bit and they're like,
yeah,
spent all this time, energy, effort on our internal culture. And while we don't have a huge pool of money, we're not doing happy hours, we're not doing lunch and learns, we're not sending our employees to conferences and conventions. What can we do with this small amount of money virtually? And so I've been doing team building just to really kind of switch up the culture. So then that way, when we get on the other side of this, we actually have an opportunity, they have an opportunity to really reignite. Because a lot of times they haven't seen each other in 9-10 months or so. So even the smallest thing can make a difference, just to kind of,
you know, people are so hungry for that. I thought, yeah, totally.
What are some of the successful strategies that you've seen for team building?
For me particularly, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I use Clifton Strengths to be able to create that communication tool. And so some of that work I had already started within some of my companies that they were planning on doing other efforts this year, that where we transitioned. And so whereby it would have been like a day-long event, we've chopped it up into 4 or 5 2-hour, because I don't think that anyone has more of an attention span for more than about 2 hours, at least, or even an hour and a half. And then just breaking it up. And actually, I've found that it's had a way better impact because it's a slow embedment. I leave them with an exercise at every specific, at the end of it, each specific session. And then that way they have a chance to think on it and really kind of embed it within the organization also. I don't know about you, Emily, what you've been doing.
Yeah, I've been taking the two, like depending on the client, the lens of looking at cultural bias and the lens of looking at trust and creating safety. And I feel like the safety approach right now is really resonating with people. So looking at like, how are you compensating for the small informal interactions that you used to have with your colleagues? You see your colleague come in, he's looking a little dejected, and you go over and you check in with that. Like, that's not happening, you know? And that is actually, depending on your cultural background, that's more or less important. For more collectivistic cultures, that's way, way, way more important, the nonverbal relation. And so trying to give teams space to figure out what's missing, what role did that fill, how do they fill it now? You know, given the confines of where we're at, how do you fill it? And then also things like, you know, how are you responding when other people are making mistakes so that you can create a team culture where people feel okay to make mistakes? You know, it's hard to say, if we have it modeled from the top, everyone can make mistakes, great, but we can't change the CEO, you know? So how do you within your team show up in a way that's supportive of people taking risks and feeling safe to take some mixed step, because that's where innovation and, you know, things come from. That's where the next step, the next pivot is from. So that's kind of where I've been looking.
Yes. Now, that's for people who have teams. For solopreneurs like yourself, Marty, what are some of the things that you've been able to do to cope with COVID and to remain healthy and mentally well during this time frame?
Yeah, definitely, because you don't have those business luncheons anymore like you normally would, or the business networking. So fortunately, some of the networking groups that I'm part of have been proactive and they've taken it online like we're doing today, and just having that interaction. It may not be the same as in person, but you're still able to engage. And having the work-life balance, especially when you're working from a home office versus at a brick and mortar office. You know, sometimes when you leave that brick and mortar office, there's a shutdown period. You know, you're on your way home and then you're switching to home mode. And so the big challenge is having that mentality of being able to turn off the work for the day when you're still in the environment that you've been working in all day. I know personally myself, I've had to really, even in the last month, really remind myself that after a certain time at night, I'm not checking my emails anymore, because I didn't realize how much I was constantly just looking. And then I can't engage into that family home life because I'm always still attached to that business life. So just having things in place that when you're having to work at home, you have to be able to still find a way to turn off, and that part of my day is done and this next part of my day is starting. And I think that's been the biggest challenge.
No, you made some gold. You have some gold right there, Marty. Excellent points. One of the things that I talk to clients about as a business consultant is that we've all been brought up with this idea of we're hustling and money doesn't sleep and you're an entrepreneur, so you have to work 24/7. And I stepped away from that mindset to say, nope, I'm a small business owner. My business hours are 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Because if you don't set boundaries, what happens is you don't have a home work life balance. One of the things that I did, and this was really recently after working virtually and working at home for years, is I completely removed all of my work emails from my cell phone, because I would find no matter what I do or where I'm at, I'm constantly like, what's going on? Yeah, responding to emails. And I had to, you know, and it actually took an adjustment because people were always used to me being available. So mm-hmm. now my emails are only on my laptop. So I physically have to go to work in order to respond to them. And so it's, people are like, okay, Sharifa hasn't answered us in like 10 hours. And I'm like, okay, but I reserve the right to, you know, to allow 24 hours for any email response. But my life in general, my personal life is so much better. Have you done anything like that with Patrick? I know you have an extremely interesting work-life balance.
It's crazy because, I run a site, I write for a magazine, I write for video games and do voices for video games, I write books. My wife is a entrepreneur. This chain right here is from her jewelry company that she runs. So it's just like my wife is running a small business and taking care of the two kids most of the day. I'm in here teaching. I have to remind my students sometimes that I have a life. It's like Thanksgiving, I was getting emails from students like, can you take a look at my research paper? And I'm just like, absolutely. But then I'm not going to answer you the rest of the day. Like, and I didn't even have to do that. My wife was like, you could just not answer them. It's Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I've noticed during COVID, I've gotten a lot closer to my students. I have about 160 students this semester. I'm teaching 4 classes and they're super clingy. They are super
clingy. Don't say that. They're watching.
But it's okay. Like, I don't mind answering questions and like, but it's like sometimes, yeah, 10, 11 o'clock at night, I have to go, okay, I'll answer them when I wake up, which will be like 6 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, so it's like, they could wait 6-7 hours before I answer. So it's like, I miss being in the class. That's my favorite part of like my job, walking around and stuff like that and talking and emoting. But I have gotten a lot closer to my students. I feel like COVID has been a time for adaptation. Mm-hmm. That you have to like really put your money where your mouth is. If you're really good at what you do, you should be able to adapt and learn a new way of doing it and just as successful. I've met so on the other side of the coin with writers, so many writers on Twitter, on Instagram, this is not the time to write. I can't find the time to be creative right now. I'm under too much pressure. And it's like throughout history, the best writing, the best music, the best theater, the best everything has been done during times of chaos.
More millionaires are made during a recession than any other time.
Absolutely. So it's like, wow. You can't find the time to be creative now, then you were never creative in the first place. And don't use COVID as an excuse. Don't say this, don't say that. It's just like, you don't got it. And that's okay. Go back to your other job, do what you have to do. So it's like with me, I finished 2 books during COVID and I'm working on 2 more. And I thank my wife for that, because usually like I would write when I was at work, like during my lunch break and on the way to work and on the way back. And now it's kind of like, I'm done teaching my classes. So my wife will be like, oh, you're done. And I'm like, yeah, but if I was at work, I would have like an hour to grade and then I would have to take the bus an hour home. So I technically have 2 hours. My wife would be like, no, you don't. You're mine now. I own you. Go change a diaper. Go do this. So then I have to adapt. Mm-hmm. So I write at different times of the day, or I send my article to my phone and I'll get a paragraph here, change the diaper, baby goes down for a nap, write another paragraph. So you have to find a way to adapt. And if you can't, then maybe it wasn't for you. And I think that's the problem too, because everyone has like that one job that they do to pay the bills, but you're really defined by your side hustle. Your side mm-hmm. hustle is very like your happiness comes from. It's like the thing that puts a smile on your face. So, but this is the thing. A lot of people don't have a side hustle and a lot of people never have a side hustle. So this would have been a great time during COVID for them to find it.
But a lot of people found it though. I found the exact opposite. The majority of the people that I spoke to started writing that book. I even spoke to a publisher who said, that her agency almost, she was like 600% increase in like new clients, new books, because people had the time now. And I saw you, Dawn. Dawn, you wrote during this time, correct?
I've wanted to write a book for 20 years now. And it gave me the space that I needed. I wrote 30,000 words in 3 weeks. It just
poured out.
Wow.
I call it Her, and here's a shameless plug. It's my book, Armored. And so, so basically she has her own persona. She will wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning to write. There were ideas that were there that just out of me. So yeah, I absolutely agree with it. I missed her whenever I was working on my full-time job and not being able to work on my side hustle, as you call it, Patrick. So yeah, I totally get it. That's why my smile was getting bigger as you were talking, because I totally related to what you were saying.
I just feel it was a great time to find like-minded people that you normally wouldn't have the time for. And I've noticed that, like, you know, Sharifa, you're right that a lot of people have taken the time to do those things, but there's a lot of other people that are just kind of lost right now that we're not really even talking about because we're not even really hearing from them.
It reminds me of a post that I made. Go ahead.
I just said, I find myself a couple of minutes every day, like just checking up on some of those people. Like, what's up? You know, I sent one of my friends the other day a writing gig. I was like, they're looking for a writer. You said you wanted to write. Go get it. If they decide not to do it, then you say you always wanted to write. Now you have an opportunity, you know? So it's crazy.
It reminds me of a post that I made on Facebook, and it was actually a post that I actually just shared. It wasn't even one of my creative, beautiful, you know, genius posts. I just saw it. I give myself a lot of credit, right? And I was like, oh, this makes sense. Let me share it. And the post basically said that if you are not using this opportunity, this once in a lifetime opportunity to better your life, to write that book, to write that screenplay, to do what you've, you know, learn that second language, you are missing out on an opportunity of a lifetime. So I just shared it. Now, out of all the opinionated things that I say, this post got the most kickback that I've like never had in like 30 years, you know what I mean? But people were like, no, Sharifa, if they don't want to do anything, it's okay. Maybe they've been working for 30 years and this is the first time they have off. Maybe they're overwhelmed. And people gave me all these scenarios because they're like, you know what? Everybody isn't able to take advantage of this time frame. So I was like, okay, I get it. You know, some of us can, some of us can. That's what we're here.
Yeah, I would I feel both ways because I've birthed this podcast with my co-host during this time, and it's something like we're being really intentional about it, and that's exciting. And I work a fraction of the amount of time that I used to because I have a 3 and a 5-year-old. And so like as a mom, I'm back in the 50s in terms of like how the house has been distributed, and the amount of time that I'm able to take to myself is mini, you know? So I'm proud if I'm even like, I don't have a sitter all of a sudden this week. She was exposed on Thanksgiving. So my husband's watching the kids while I do this. And then I'm just back to being with the kids. So I want to come in defense of the people that aren't putting out their best work and give them props for just surviving. Cause it's really hard for some of us.
Well said, Emily. Thank you. So I'm learning to, you know, some people, there is a balance. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Marty.
All right. Well, I work with a lot of, I'm kind of the facilitator between a tax preparer and the owners of the company. And every year I see a lot of anxiety come up when taxes are coming due and tax returns are coming up. But just take a deep breath, get some good checklists. I have some available if anybody needs them, of just what tax preparers are looking for, how to interact, and just take a deep breath. You'll get through it. You get through it every year. Every year you get that tax return filed, and then you're on to the next thing for the next year. In the tax world, we feel like we only have a couple of months off and we're starting again, but just take a deep breath. Just push into it. Just try to be organized and just have honest conversations. This is the time to talk to your tax preparer. I don't personally do taxes, but this is the time. There's a saying in the accounting industry that if you talk before December 31st, they can coach you, but if it's after December 31st, they can only referee, because what's what's available is available. So don't be afraid to have that conversation with a tax preparer. Just be honest where you're at in your business. Some businesses are struggling, some are booming, some are not impacted, but just have the conversation. There's a lot of unknowns with the PPPs coming up and loan forgiveness, and just breathe through it and just ask the tax preparer what they need, and they'll help you. And if you need help, I'm happy to give out checklists that will help you kind of through that process and get to that next step.
Fantastic. Thank you. Emily, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I guess I would leave folks with two things. One would be, you know, I think that we're all dealing with continuous change right now, and the response is so often like, what needs to happen? How do I do it? What needs to happen? How do I do it? And I want to put another question in front of those two, which is, who do I need to talk to? And really, who do I need to talk to? What do we need to do? How are we going to do it? And just remember, our networks are there and we have people around us and we need people. We are social beings. So to reconnect with folks and start asking yourself that question. And put a plug out for the podcast. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook right now, because Apple's, you know, loading us up into their system. So it's the Humanize Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Yeah, so would love to have people come join me and my co-host for some pretty challenging, tough and honest conversations. We're looking to disrupt the status quo of the social order right now.
You looking for somebody to disrupt? Call Ash Sharifa. I'm good at disrupting. That's
yo,
what
good,
I
good, good.
I'm gonna join you and talk for a little bit. Patrick, what do you have for us?
Basically what I was saying before, like, this is a time where you have the time for the first time in a long time to ask more questions, to get geeky, to have fun, to learn. And, you know, for me being a journalist, I had an opportunity now to work on the type of journalism that I love the most, which is video game journalism. And it's been so much fun to speak to developers and find out, like, what powered some of these crazy games. Why does E.T. on Atari play the way that it does? Why does this game play that way? And I think for parents, it's so easy to dismiss video games as an art. It's the highest grossing form of pop culture in the entire world. However, our kids use it incorrectly. They play it just to, like, relieve some stress, da 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 da. And it's so different. It's a huge field with tons of opportunity for growth, for learning, for education, all of these different things. So, like, being able to play a small part in that and tell these developer stories for the first time has been so much fun for me. And to write in that non-stuffy way, because, like you said, you read off my bio and I came across, like, you know, bloody old stuffy English man. You know? And I write the same exact way that I conduct myself now, down to earth, really fun. So it's like, my books are for people that love video games, but they're also for young people that are interested in possibly working in the video game industry one day. So that's what I would tell people. Like, if you want to read fun, light, but informative stuff on the video game industry, go to my site, patrickhickeyjr.com/books. My Instagram is flooded with pictures of video games, of my children, of food, all sorts of fun stuff. Patrick Hickey Jr. I just want to connect with people. I want to have a good time. So feel free to connect with me and let's have fun.
I have my son, my 23-year-old, connect with you. He goes to work, great guy, has a job. But when he gets off work and he gets home, he plays video games. And I'm like, son, make a video game. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always into ownership. Like, figure out how you can monetize this. But like you said, he uses it for stress relief.
Have him talk to me. I speak to video game developers all the time. I've done voice acting in about 6 games. I've done writing in the video game industry. I've seen games go from the start to the finish. I would love to talk to him, love to connect with him.
Make that happen. Thank you, Dawn. Go ahead and take us out.
Oh, thank you, Sharifa. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on the panel today. And so, and if I were to close with anything overall, it's really my calling overall for this year. So 2020, I used the opportunity, like I said in the very beginning in my intro, My husband's stroke changed my life. I am, like, I am an unintentional entrepreneur. I'm also an unintentional caregiver. And so his stroke changed me, and I learned a lot, because not only is he a stroke survivor, he's also a stage 4 cancer survivor. So all along the way, I've applied my professional skills and my crisis management skills that I've had from a work standpoint into my personal life as well. And that's what my book Armored is about. And it's found at DawnFLandry.com, as well as on Amazon. And so in the book, so my whole like mantra behind it is, if you're not in a life tragedy or a life challenge right now, there's one impending with aging, you know, aging populations and whatnot, are you prepared for it? And that's what the book is about, is how do you prepare your life for those challenges?
I think that is very powerful.
Yeah, and the name of it is Armored. So thank you, Sharifa.
You are so welcome. I think that is powerful. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. But please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Please support our guests. Visit their websites. Follow them on social media. Their information is in the Facebook post. Send them a message. Send them an inbox. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.